creative journey. It's easy to get lost, but don't worry, you'll lift off. Sometimes you just need a creative pep talk.
Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk podcast. I'm your host, Andy J.
Pizza.
Today on the show, we have an episode that is jam-packed with the best creative advice. And I can hear you pushing back saying, Andy, I know you believe in your ideas, but come on, that's a bit egotistical. But I can say that with all the confidence in the world because this is the best advice. Because it's not coming all from me. It's coming from an incredible group of people from the Best Advice Show with Zach Rosen. So I was a guest on the Best Advice Show a while back. And after getting to know Zach and a little bit about his show, I was thrilled to get him on here sharing a bunch of little clips from his wonderful guests. Why? Because he has the most incredible people on his show. If you've known me more than 5 minutes, you probably know one of my all-time favorite bands is Waxahachie, aka Katie Crutchfield. He had Katie Crutchfield on his show, and it was a fantastic episode. He's had people like comedian Chris Gethard. And on this episode, he is going to bring some amazing advice from an artist that I've been a huge fan of for ages, all the way back to college, filmmaker Mike Mills. Started in illustration, graphic design. He was featured in that movie, Beautiful Losers, with a bunch of my favorite artists that were part of a movement that really inspired my whole thing. And then he became a filmmaker, making movies like Beginners with Ewan McGregor or his latest Come On, Come On with Joaquin Phoenix. We're gonna hear from Mike Mills on the show today. And I just love the advice. I thought about it. I've thought about that advice a ton since. Really, really good stuff all the way through. Today, a fresh take on a Creative Pep Talk episode. Zach's gonna bring a bunch of clips with the kind of amazing creative advice that he knows that our listeners are all about. And I just loved listening through these and diving in and chatting through and riffing on these clips with Zach. Had an absolute blast. Zach is an incredible podcaster, and he's got a bunch of amazing work under his belt in that podcasting space. Got a lot more experience than me in that way. And it was just cathartic to talk to a podcaster of that persuasion who really takes the craft seriously, and educational and just a ton of fun. So you're going to want to check out his show after this called The Best Advice Show. The best part, I know what you're thinking. You're like, I don't have time for another podcast, man. These podcasts are under 10 minutes. Most of them are under 10 minutes, and they're the juiciest part of the conversation. Perfect for shower listening or little commutes or drives. Go check out The Best Advice Show after we dive into some of the best creative advice from the show in this episode with Zach Rosen himself. Let's do it. Your next season is looking busier than the last. Take something off your plate by putting Factor Meals onto your plate. Eliminating extra decisions can free up brain power for other things like self-care and creativity, and Factor Meals makes eating well streamlined with always fresh, never frozen meals that are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready in just 2 minutes. They have a weekly menu of over 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week like breakfast, on-the-go, lunches, snacks, and beverages. I like their little vitamin-y shots. They're tasty. I like the spicy one. Head to factormeals.com/peptalk50 and use code peptalk50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code peptalk50 at factormeals.com/peptalk50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site, It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it, got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site anyway. Go check it out, AnnieJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. Rosen is the creator of The Best Advice Show. The Best Advice Show is a podcast with these little mini-sodes, mini-episodes, almost always just like 5 to 10 minutes long. Each one contains those kind of juicy, super insights that we always try to pack every creative pep talk episode full with. And they come from a wide range of diversely interesting guests. Some of my creative superhero people, like writer Hanif Abdur-Raqib and musician Katie Crutchfield of Waxahachie, which every listener knows I'm just obsessed with. And as well as like psychologists, journalists, comedians, and even Zach's wife. I met Zach when I had the honor to be on The Best Advice Show a while back, and I've just been really inspired by his podcasting skills and experience. And I'm super pumped to have him on the show and bring a bunch of the best advice from The Best Advice Show that's really creative pep talky. And yeah, I'm just pumped to have you. Thanks for coming on the show, Zach.
Thanks for inviting me on for this show and tell episode.
And also, I saw that as we're recording this, you just released an episode with the singer-songwriter behind the band The Weather Station, which me and my wife have listened to a billion times. That song I tried to tell you.
So good.
It was getting late.
Oh, man. Dude, every time it comes on, my wife and I look at each other and we're like, oh, man, it's so good.
It's so good. I released that episode in honor of Earth Day.
Okay, that's fantastic. And just as an aside, when you talk to somebody who has made you feel emotions, do you get intimidated?
I feel like it's my duty to let them know how their work has impacted me.
Yeah.
But it's a fine line between saying what I feel or telling them like specifically what I love about them and going overboard, you know, and just like fanboying out for the whole thing. So I try to keep it like, I try to leave them with like something really potent, but then like try to remember that it's just a human being that I'm talking to and like, you know, respecting their time from there.
Yeah.
But it is like one of the great benefits of what we do. We have an excuse to just call people and say, like, can I talk to you for an hour? Which would be weird if we didn't have podcasts, but it shouldn't be. But it is. That's the way of the world.
Yeah, and it's cool. You know, I do get very intimidated, and I try also not to super fanboy out. But at the same time, I try to do that same thing of, like, I want to thank them. Because as a creator, as you know, like, you know, you don't always know if what you're doing means anything to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I
feel
it.
So good when someone tells you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, the first person we're going to talk about, we're going to share some advice from one of your episodes. And if I had interviewed Mike Mills, I would have been extremely intimidated. I got introduced by the documentary Beautiful Losers way back in the day. It was
I don't know that.
What, oh, you haven't that? Seen that? Oh, it's no. So good. Oh, man, all of my listeners should go
I'm
watch
watching
that.
It tonight.
It's so good. It's kind of, it's just a picture.
He made it or he's
he
in it?
He didn't make it. He's in it. It's kind of a snapshot of the art scene that he grew up in, like in the, mostly on the West Coast, but not exclusively. Mm-hmm. And all of those artists, Barry McGee, Jeff McFetridge, Mike Mills, all these kind of people, they're just like, it's, you know, that's where my interest in graphic design and illustration came from, were these people.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he had all this massive transition from like illustrator, visual artist, graphic designer into the filmmaker that, you know, most of us know him as. You know, he made the movie Thumbsuckers starring Lou Pucci. I remember seeing that back in the day. And I love Beginners with Ewan McGregor and the late Christopher Plummer. But yeah, Mike Mills is a massive hero. And he brought some incredible advice to your show.
Yeah. So we talked about, well, I guess it comes down to like the goddamn blank page.
Yes.
Which can plague any of us, whether we're writers or painters or radio makers, just that beginning when we have nothing. Like, that's where it starts. And I feel stuck all the time. I think it's totally normal to feel stuck. And there are different strategies I know you've talked about for when we are feeling stuck. But the thing that Mike talked to me about, which I hadn't heard before, which I love, is this thing. So if you're feeling stuck, try this thing that Mike does.
Yeah.
So I think that loving anything, being excited by anything, of course, in ways we can't totally understand a name, is going to ignite that generative process inside yourself. And often when I'm really stuck, I'll just write down pieces of art that I love.
Oh.
You know, and just as like a hope-making, it's almost like a gratitude list or something. Or I'll just pick one piece and just describe it. I'll just like write like why I think it's great or what are its qualities. More importantly than why I think it's great, just describe it. Sometimes that's just like so important. That's amazing. Just to have that feeling, at least for me, kind of often like lifts me up and like kind of makes me want to do something.
So this advice from Mike hit me super hard because for me as an artist, like even though I do the Creative Pep Talk podcast and I seem super jazzed all the time only because you're getting the sliver.
You really do.
People just get the sliver of my most jazzed hour of the week.
Right.
But the truth is I have just as much of that no energy to life as probably any other artist does. And just hearing Mike talk about like ruminating on the things that make you love life, it gets you into that headspace. And that's the kind of place that I want to create from.
100%. What's the, so this thing of, about like remembering what you love and then like noting its details, describing what it is about the thing. What's a recent artifact or art thing that you've tried to just deconstruct a little bit to understand the magic inside of it?
Yeah. Honestly, I've been having another phase, a whole new phase in appreciation of my love of dreams. When I was in high school, I got real into like trying to master lucid dreaming on purpose. I was that kind of kid. You did?
Oh, yeah, man. In high school.
Did you ever have any luck with it?
Once.
I've had a few lucid dreams.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us anything about it?
I had just listened to this incredible radio documentary about Leonard Cohen. And it was like not long after my heart was entirely broken. And I had this lucid dream where like I was in the room with this person who broke my heart. And I just like was able to tell myself to like reach over and just like touch her shoulder. It was very like subtle and minimal, but like I woke up just feeling all of those same emotions that I had felt when my heart was broken.
That's incredible.
I didn't fly or anything, but like I had a slight bit of control over my dream state.
I feel like I would do that and then instantly fly. I also like that you made us all feel comfortable and safe. Like when I touched the shoulder, it was respectful. It was a gentle touch.
Gentle touch.
That's amazing. But I have been, dreams for me have been doing it because I've been getting back into just kind of the Jungian dream analysis and how much it's just totally in sync with how I think about storytelling and that kind of metaphor. And when I start when I'm feeling really crappy about life, going to that place gets me like, oh, this is what is romantic about life. This is what makes life worth making art about. So that I love that practice because it's a systematic thing that you can turn to in those moments when you're like, man, why do I even make creative work at all?
Yeah. And like he likens it to a gratitude list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is true. It's just like there are so many things in this world that are worth getting excited about. Therefore, I should try to make something that's worth getting excited about.
And speaking of making something worth getting excited about, I feel like for me personally, sometimes I feel like usually when I've had a really big breakthrough in a piece of work, if a story broke in a unique way or a piece just was like, oh man, that was exactly what I'm trying to do. Mm. The next time I come back to the blank page, I am intimidated because I'm like, well, that's not going to happen again. And so I love this next piece of advice that you're bringing about. It's about tiny goals, right?
Tiny goals. And whether, you know, you're a full-time artist or you're just trying to make space for your creative work when you can, as you quest toward like just putting whatever it is substantial out into the world, make these tiny goals. And this is something I learned from the novelist Brian Selfon, who wrote what became a really critically acclaimed book called The Night Workers. But he did this while working a full-time job. And so he had to figure out, like, how can I just get this done without being overwhelmed by the goal of trying to make an important novel?
And I think that if you can lower those standards to almost nothing, like, can I sit down in my chair? Can I think a thought? Let's just talk about writing. Like, you know, is there a sentence that I can write? And I think that if you stop and freeze at that moment and trying to make a great sentence, you haven't lowered your standards enough. Like whatever the lowest standard that you can reach. And I think that if you can kind of have two brains, one where you have that immediate low standard, just trying to make something. And then in the back of your brain, you have the bigger goal. And you can kind of keep flipping back and forth between them. You won't get paralyzed with fear, but then you also won't get so comfortable with producing the easiest, simplest thing. That could be a good path to move forward. So giving up on trying to write a big bestseller, giving up on trying to write a great novel, really freed me up to just be a little bit more playful and then just try to see if I could write something that was kind of meh. I mean, that could be another way of saying the same thing as aiming at meh. But then each time that you're revising it, you could have a similarly low goal of, can I make it a little bit better? Can I make it? And then the next time you sit down, can I make it a little bit better? So each time you have in the back of your mind your high-end big goal, but the goal every time that you're sitting down to work on something, you could have it be a very immediate goal of, can I have the character not enter a room that they've already entered once? You know, can I have the character who died 5 pages ago not suddenly appear alive on this page? And then you could achieve those little goals while keeping the bigger goal at your mind, and it can help you get there without being paralyzed by, you know, I'm not there yet, you know, I don't have the skills. And then gradually you could be building your skills as you're moving through the little goals.
I love this advice because every time I watch a movie or I read a book, I'm always just overwhelmed by not even the quality, just the quantity of work that went into it. I'm just like, man, yeah. I don't know how anybody can get themselves to do something like this. And I heard a quote recently from Jordan Peele where he was talking about the rough draft is just him putting sand in the sandbox and then he can build castles later. And I thought that kind of reminded me of this.
I love that.
This advice, because I feel like when you hear that advice of like, just do a little thing, just do a little bit, you can feel like, yeah, that sounds great, but are you really going to get any castles from that? Like, it's just going to be a bunch of crap if you're just kind of chipping away, but you can slowly like take chunks of that marble away and craft it over time if you just show up.
Totally. And I love how he's just keep saying, like, if you're feeling overwhelmed, just keep lowering the goal, like just sitting down in the chair for a minute. There, that's the first goal. Good, done. you know? So just be super realistic. And I think it's also about like being kind to yourself, because we can so beat ourselves up when we like sit down and like, oh, we don't get that chapter done or whatever. But it's like, no, just like get a sentence done, get a word done, and just build.
Yeah. And that notion of when you go sit down, I, you know, one of the things we've been exploring a ton on this show is I've been thinking a lot about how our outer spaces are a reflection of our inner space, and that you can use your setting, whether it's a different desk or a different chair or a different pencil or whatever it is, to kind of trick your brain into going into different spaces. Because for me, creative activity of any kind requires you accessing different parts of your brain, because there is a time to just word vomit and dump all that stuff into a document. And there's a totally different part of your brain that's editing that. The next piece of advice is around this idea of an autonomous zone, which I feel like gets at this, the importance of space so that you don't beat yourself up. What's the autonomous zone all about?
So it's really just in order to give yourself the space to aim at meh, what Brian was talking about. And if that space is 5 minutes a day or 5 hours a day, just try to embrace this idea of being very forthright and explicit about creating your own autonomous zone.
In other words, to have free spaces in your life, free of other people, free of the profit motive, you know, the pressure to be earning a living during that time, free of interruption, free of social media, free of duties and obligations that, you know, impinge on, for one thing, the imagination. And the way in which this is practiced in my life most diligently is in the morning hours, which from 7 to 10 a.m. I treat as sacrosanct. There's no appointments, no email, no social media, no interaction with family members. That's my writing time.
So my agent, Ryan, who also is kind of an agent / manager, we talk about managing time, managing projects, what we're taking on, what we're not taking on. And, you know, I have a bunch of different pieces to what I do. And for the longest time, fitting the podcast in or fitting a kid's book in, fitting things into my schedule that were extremely important and were kind of neat, required the best creative energy that I had, just felt completely impossible. And this notion of like, you know, I think what we end up doing is we think that we can multitask and just like switch in and out of things all the time. But that idea of having set blocks, that is a complete game changer. And it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be you're a full-time artist and you get to block out 3 days a week for this stuff. Even any amount of space that you can block out for yourself, like that helps, right?
Big time. As a listener to your show, I think your other listeners will be curious. Tell me about like these blocks of time and how you schedule them and how long they are and stuff.
They've grown over time because I've realized that if I will cut up my week, I can actually get more done in each section. And so at first it was I just said to Ryan, I was like, look, you're going to see on the calendar, Monday is completely blocked off. No calls, nothing. That's all podcast stuff. And then that turned into Monday, Tuesday, where I was like, I'm going to take all those days for just deep work stuff. And then that crept up into Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday morning, Thursday morning. And so all of that space is now just deep work stuff whatever it is, whether it's illustration on a book or a client thing, or if it's working on the podcast or what have you, that is uninterrupted space. And the truth is that, you know, all the other time is way more regimented. It's more like, and then after that time's up, we have 4 calls in a row. But just separating that energy, it's just like accessing that different parts of your brain. It's the hardest part is getting into the flow state. Staying in it isn't that hard. And so I think, you know, just it's been super effective for me. So I love that advice.
And so when you're doing these big chunks of time, are you able to have the discipline to like actually not check email and not check social and all that stuff?
That's a great
question. It's very hard for me.
That's a great question. And the truth is sometimes yes, sometimes no, but honestly, the most sacred of all of those spaces is the kind, and everyone laughs at me about this, but from about 5:30 in the morning to 6:30 in the morning, Monday through Friday, it's just an hour long in the bathtub. Sorry for everybody's mental image, but that's when I write the podcast. So every day I'm showing up in that space.
Do you have a waterproof laptop?
I know. I just write it on my phone. Even, you know, this kind of goes back to that notion of shooting for meh, this idea of like, sitting in front of a laptop is too intimidating. So just writing on my phone feels like, I'm just writing on my phone.
Yeah,
you know, whatever.
Yeah, just texting. Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you write the podcast in the bath at 5:30 in the morning.
Yep.
Incredible.
Pretty much every day. And it goes that same thing of like, most of it's trashed. Most of it, you're just like, I'm just going to do this for an hour and know that, you know, it's probably not going to turn into anything. But if I just keep doing this, eventually you pile up some decent stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those of us who aren't in the Andy Pizza role of being full-time artists, but who are just trying to carve out that time, you might have kids, you might be working jobs and you might be thinking like, yeah, right. Like this is just too luxurious, this autonomous zone. I can't do it. And I think this gets into my next piece of advice, which is maybe the one that I've thought about the most out of the 400 or whatever episodes I've done. And it's very simple, but the advice is ask for help and learn how to ask for help. And so when you're thinking about this need that you have to live in this autonomous zone for 5 minutes or 5 hours, whatever it is, think about the people in your life, the people who make your life work, whether that's your partner, whether it's, you know, your mother-in-law, and expressing to them, I need this time, not so I can go, you know, dawdle, but I need this time because it's going to make me a fuller person. It's going to make me show up better as a parent, as a kid, as a friend, as a colleague. And so being really explicit, saying, I need this. And like, there's a vulnerability there in admitting when you need something, but turns out we all need stuff.
Yeah.
I'm indebted to Beth Pickens, who is a psychologist, and she does a lot of therapy with artists. And this was the advice she gave me. Ask for help.
I think we have to always tell people everything that we need, because we all float around like we're just little children masquerading as adults, just assuming that nobody needs anything and we're the only ones with needs and we have to get rid of those needs or diminish them. But we all need emotional support.
What's a way that we can practice giving and asking for help?
I like to do everything just starting with a quantity, just quantifying it, like a goal of, I'm going to ask for 3 things this week that are directly related to my creative practice. And here's what those needs are going to be. And here are some appropriate people I think I could ask. And I'm just going to practice on the asking. I have no control over the outcome. Then I'm going to avail myself 3 times to people. Maybe I'm asked for something, or maybe I offer something, or I connect with another artist friend and say, this is the kind of help I need right now. What kind of help do you need right now? Let's help each other find it.
And not necessarily a one-to-one where the help you're offering, you're getting back from that same person.
Right. Because maybe the things you ask for, maybe you don't know how to give, or you don't have that resource to give. Or maybe the person you're asking from something from, they have a different thing to reciprocate with, because we all have different things to offer. Some are universal, but many are very different. And we also have to identify how do we match the ask, the request, to somebody who's appropriate, rather than I'm going to try to ask this person for emotional support who I know cannot and will never give it. But if I just try hard enough, and then I can prove that I won by going to the hardware store for a gallon of milk, they don't have it to give.
Right.
So we also have to think about who are we going to for which things, and not one person can't meet every need, which is like, you know, the fallacy of marriage and modernity.
I love this. And it actually came to me at a time where I needed to be reminded of this and I needed to hear this fresh, because I feel like every artist has that burden of you're doing your thing. There's an element of art that just inherently feels selfish. You know what I mean? You're making something, you're expressing yourself, and you can work yourself into this place where you're not asking for help from anybody. But the truth is, you know, even my spouse back in the day when I wasn't working full time, there were these important conversations that had to happen where we negotiated our time and said, look, like this is what I need. What do you need? How can I help you? And part of that was like, you know, we had early on had really in-depth conversations around just like energy levels and how our energy goes throughout the day. And so we both kind of figured that, like, in terms of creativity, my energy's in the morning, hers is at night, and we can kind of flip-flop kid duties in between that so that we're not spending the creative energy in that way. And so I love this because I feel like everybody needs to be reminded, like, you need to speak up for yourself. You need to ask for help. You need to have those conversations that there's never a good time to have them. But they really are the building blocks to being able to get the best work from yourself and do some of the stuff that's actually really important to you.
Totally. Yeah, like all this stuff, it's practice. And I had to practice this during the pandemic when I was just feeling like, man, I am so freaking depressed. I'm in my house with my kids. I love my kids, but I need to get out. And I needed some artist dates with myself. And I felt first guilty asking my wife, like, I need to go see a movie. I need to go to the show. But it's like, no, I actually did. And when I told her how important it was to me, she totally was fine with it. And it's made me feel so much better. I think the key is, if you are talking about this navigating the stuff with your partner, is like making sure to help them ask for what they need as well, that it shouldn't be one-sided.
I completely agree. And I also just want to highlight that, yes, it's the people in your life, but it's also getting people in your life that aren't currently in your life. You know, for me, honestly, I say this knowing it's not simple to connect with people that are a few steps ahead of you on the creative path. It's not easy to get time with those people, but I say it because it's so important that there have been times where it's taken me years to find those people to ask for help that went to places that I had never been, that could actually give me some direction. Those little moments, and they literally might be a 30-minute conversation at a conference or, you know, whatever it might be, or an email, seeking out that help from people that have done the kinds of things you want to do, that is a game changer. And I think we just constantly just toil in our own perspectives, in our own little blinders, and realize, like, you know, that outside perspective we're looking for, we're not going to find it by just pushing harder.
Absolutely. Yeah, this one ties into what I think will be the last piece of advice that I'll share today. It's a help asking practice that in a way is very clean and reciprocal. Unlike some of these other things where you're asking some people for help and then you're offering help to other people, like this is clean. It's called a structured walk. And I learned it from radio goddess Sharon Mashihi.
All right. It's recording. And unfortunately, I'm not able to fully monitor the levels, but they look good.
You and I would take a walk, and the first, and we'd time it.
I was thinking we could do 25 minutes you and then 25 minutes me, and we'll both walk in one direction, then walk back. Does that sound good?
Perfect.
You know, my friend Aaron Finbloom devised this, but I always think of, like, Socrates and those dudes. They were walking.
So I'm walking on Belle Isle, which I may have mentioned to you before. It's the big public park in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
So it's very simple. Like, you get someone in your life who is invested somewhat, or perhaps not at all, in your creative practice, and they themselves are venturing down some road that they don't know, and they themselves are, you know, working on their own project, and basically you are going to walk with them, say for 50 minutes or an hour, and for the first half of the walk, they tell you about what they're struggling with, and the second half, like it's time. So at the 30-minute mark or whatever your halfway point is, you switch gears and then you talk about yourself. And so it's equal. And it's like I started doing this with my friend Christine. We check in now every month. She has her own art practice, which is very different from mine. And we have suggestions for each other that we wouldn't have otherwise come up with, partly because we're working kind of in different areas, but also just because we're totally different people, but we're both like invested in our friendship and in each other's well-being, that we look forward to this monthly thing where half will be her, half will be me. And by the end of it, you have gotten some stuff off your chest. And you don't even have to be an artist to do this. Like, you can just have a structured walk friend. You can do it once, you can do it in installments or whatever, but just like someone who will listen for a half hour, and then you will then listen to them for a half hour. It's very basic, but hugely helpful.
I feel like this kind of action had played a big role in the most formative relationships I've had in my creative practice. And I think that the biggest stumbling block or the biggest obstacle to actually living this advice is just the willingness not to be chill. Like, just to be like, you know what? Like, it's the same. Like, I'm thinking about, we're kind of doing a structured walk right now, in that this isn't a regular interview. When we started talking about how we were going to do this, it got me really pumped, because I thought, man, it's like an elevated kind of approach to a guest episode. And it takes a little more effort, but also takes a little bit of vulnerability. And the same goes for approaching a friend and being like, hey, I'd like to talk to you for a half an hour, and then you can talk for a half an hour. It's not chill. There's an intentional nerdiness about that. And I honestly feel like you have to have people you're comfortable doing that with, first of all. Second of all, you just got to be willing to take the risk to just look like a complete goof. Those things have been so essential in getting over those little internal hurdles. Do you ever feel like that? You ever feel kind of embarrassed of like, okay, we're going to do this thing now?
I think it's also embarrassing. Like, I think, you know, it is. This thing that I think about a lot is just like, I think it's related to the delusion that we have something important to say.
Yeah.
You know, as creative people, like it's ridiculous. Like it goes back to this thing, like making something can feel self-indulgent. It's delusional. It's awkward. Like, it's all these things, but like, we know that in our hearts that we really want to do it. So, you know, if we're honest with ourselves that it's really important to us, then the awkwardness and the delusion and stuff, I think, just come with the territory.
I completely agree. I can't remember what there's a phrase for, maybe you know it. It's like the something effect, where, you know, the dumbest person in the room thinks they're the smartest, and the smartest person has the most humility and thinks like, I better not say anything. But I'm mostly talking about hopefully my journey from going from, as a young artist, being like, I've got stuff to say, man. And then as I've got older and more experienced and skilled, the less comfortable I felt with inserting myself, which, you know, there's definitely, I could probably have taken it a few notches back. So that's not the worst thing, but I do think, you know, you have to remember, like, you know, even if you're not saying something the world's never heard, maybe you're saying it dumber than some experts can say it, there's still people that need to be, see themselves seen, or just even be validated, or just be reminded by these kinds of things. And so, you know, getting over that kind of inner critic is a huge part of the process.
Yeah. And you actually just reminded me, Sharon Mashihi, who told me about the structured walk, she gave me another piece of advice where the goal perhaps might not even be to get over the inner critic, but instead to fold that inner critic, to fold the doubt into the work. Oh. So not to pretend it's not there, but just to, like, whether or not you use it or not, but just like start the piece with, I'm a piece of shit, I don't know what I'm saying.
I
you
love
know,
that.
Like, just use the doubt. And then I think that you're going to be, I think that's going to draw you closer to the listener, because who isn't full of doubt?
if you're thinking about it while you're making it, it's probably relevant to the work. And that applies to doubts, concerns. Usually the tensions that you feel within you belong in the work, I think.
I love that. And it kind of gets at this idea of Linda Barry talks about the comic artist, talks about how every time we make a piece of work, we often feel like the objective, there it is. Yeah, what it is. That's a classic. And Linda Barry is just an incredible creator who's just so unique and interesting. But she said, every time you go to make something, you feel like you're being asked for an answer. And it can it's just as interesting or more interesting to start with a question. Like, here's what I'm like doubting, working through. That impulse often gets to a lot deeper stuff because most of the deep stuff doesn't even have a clear answer. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think you're totally right about that.
More questions. Better than more answers. Yeah.
Totally.
The questions
agree.
Are more interesting than the answers, is what I was trying to say.
I love it. And I completely agree. And I actually, over time, through that whole process of the 8 years of doing the show, I actually have tried to, instead of coming up with an episode where I'm like, this is an answer, I've more often been like, here's a question we're going to try to poke at. Because who knows?
That's great.
Well, this was kind of like a structured walk, and I really appreciate it. Zach, you're somebody who has a lot of experience in the podcasting field, something that I just kind of stumbled ass backwards into. So I've really treasured getting to chat with you and getting to pick your brain on all things audio and podcast. And I'm really glad that you got to make some time to be on the show, man.
It was a huge honor. I'm a fan of your show. That's why I emailed you asking to be on it. So this has been a real thrill. Oh, and for your listeners, I bet they could guess what your advice was on my show.
The truth is, think to yourself,
what would Andy Pizza say? When I say it, you're going to be like, of course.
Yeah. What taste?
Andy Pizza's essential advice was, you got to get high on your own supply, man.
Yeah, which is absolutely related to taste. You got to be tasting your own dish all the time. Make sure it's lighting up those internal taste buds. Yeah, of course I said that.
Incredible advice.
Thanks, Zach. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Massive thanks to Zach Rosen of The Best Advice Show. Remember, go check out The Best Advice Show. It's got the best advice, as you've already heard. I'm just pumped to be chopping it up, collaborating with a podcaster of Zach's stature and experience. Very satisfying to me. And I loved being on his show. And he's got a ton of great episodes that are short that you can fit in into the weird places where you want to listen to a podcast, but you don't have the time. Best Advice Show. That's the one. Go check it out. If this worked for you, that show's going to work for you. Go check it. Massive thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our jingle and theme music. Thanks to Connor Jones of Pinning Beautiful for editing this show. Huge thanks to the CPT team, Ryan Appleton, Sophie Miller, Katie Chandler, all making this happen every single week without me losing my mind. So grateful, and until we speak again, stay pepped up.